AFP Audio is today talking to Professor Rod Sinclair, who's a dermatologist with appointments at the University of Melbourne, St Vincent's Hospital and the Epworth Hospital. Hi, Rod.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. So we're talking about an article that you authored for us in the July 2012 edition of Australian Family Physician titled Skin Checks. And certainly as a GP, you know, I need to get my skin checked is something that we regularly hear. What do we know about skin cancer in Australia and GPs' training and skills and confidence in dermatology?
Well, first of all, we know that skin cancer is very common in Australia. And we know that the number of skin cancers being treated has been rising almost exponentially over about the past 40 years. And in fact, the number of skin cancers treated is pretty much doubling every 12 to 14 years. The latest figures that we have are from 2010, and that showed that there were about 550,000 skin cancers that were cut out and stitched, but in addition there's probably another 300,000 or 400,000 that were treated via other modalities such as curettage or cryotherapy or radiotherapy or some of the pharmacological measures. So we're getting close. So in another couple of years we'll be up to 1 million skin cancers per year in Australia amongst a population of 22 million. So it's a big deal in Australia.
Indeed. And so what are the current guidelines around skin checks?
Well, with skin cancer being so common, people are very aware of skin cancer. So they've either had one themselves or they've had a relative who's had one. And so people are looking at their skin. They're feeling under pressure to get their skin checked. And so it's very common for them to go to their general practitioners and say, I need a skin check. Now, if you look at the guidelines around this from various bodies, including the College of General Practitioners, the various cancer councils from each state and the Australian Cancer Network, the guidelines are pretty ambiguous. Basically, what they're saying is they're encouraging people to check their own skin. They're encouraging general practitioners to check their own skin, but they're not recommending any formal surveillance program like there is, for example, with cervical cancer or breast screening. And so the guidelines at the moment centre around what they call opportunistic screening. In other words, if a patient is seeing a general practitioner for something else, it's suggested that either that the patient or the general practitioner use that opportunity to initiate a full skin check so that you can examine the patient and check them over for skin cancers. Now, one of the problems that I think many general practitioners have is that it's not entirely practical when you've got a waiting room full of patients, when you've, you know, coming to the end of a consultation to then initiate what really is a second consultation to assess them for risk factors for skin cancers and then perform an examination of their skin. But there's no clear guidelines in terms of when patients should come back, what constitutes screening, which is not necessarily coverable by Medicare, and what constitutes part of a normal consultation. So I think general practitioners are left a little bit up in the air as to how to best manage this common request from our patients.
So we've talked about that at the moment in Australia, opportunistic skin checks are what is sort of recommended by authorities and what is requested by patients. What is there any evidence about the value of systematic skin checks?
Well, up until recently, there hasn't been much. However, earlier this year, 2012, there was a publication pertaining to a study that was done in northern Germany. And this was a study where they went into a particular province in the north of Germany called Schleswig-Holstein, and they managed to get 19% of the entire population, which was about 360,000 people, through and to have a skin check. They trained the doctors up before the skin check, and what they found is that they detected a lot of melanomas that otherwise wouldn't have been detected, and we know this because the number of melanomas diagnosed went up by about 34%. And then when they followed these patients up for the next 5 years, they found that the mortality from melanoma was reduced by 50%. So this was really the first study that showed that if you do a screening, a mass screening of the population, you will increase the detection of melanoma, and then you will reduce the subsequent mortality from melanoma. And that actually makes sense, because we know that if you diagnose melanoma early, that will reduce the mortality. And that's what they demonstrated in this study. Now, one of the interesting things is that this is northern Germany. This is not an area where melanoma is common. The incidence of melanoma in Australia is probably close to 100 times higher than it is in that area of northern Germany. So if they could detect a benefit in their population with mass screening, then I think it's quite logical to assume that in Australia, where there's a high prevalence of melanoma, that we would have an even greater impact on early detection and subsequently reducing the mortality from melanoma, which is, of course, one of the biggest killers of young Australians from cancer.
Indeed. So I suppose that'll be food for thought for the public health and epidemiologists, people down the track, to think about what will or won't work and what the cost-benefit analysis and the like is in Australia.
Well, I think eventually somebody has to try and put a dollar value on the screening program. And
yes,
the considerations that the authorities undertake when they decide whether to proceed with the screening program is, first of all, is the cancer common enough to justify screening? Secondly, is there an intervention which is meaningful? So in other words, is there a benefit in detecting the cancer early, and does that have an impact on either survival or morbidity? The third thing is there an instrument or a tool that can be used to accurately detect the cancer in question? And then fourthly, what's going to be the cost-benefit? Now, on the first count, I think skin cancer scores quite highly because it is common in Australia. Australia is the skin cancer capital of the world, and the rates of skin cancer in Australia are at least five times higher than that in the United Kingdom and America. It scores well on the fact that there is an early intervention that's meaningful, and we know that if you detect melanoma early, then that's going to have the most profound impact on patient survival. So early diagnosis, early removal of the primary melanoma will have the greatest impact on patient survival. The third thing is the instrument reliable enough? And that's been one of the areas of government concern. So the question is, can general practitioners diagnose melanoma with sufficient accuracy to enhance the test? And by that, there's twofold. One is, will they detect all the melanomas, and secondly, how many benign lesions will need to be removed in order to detect the melanoma, so the sensitivity and specificity of the instrument. And I think that's been of concern to the authorities, because when there have been publications from some of the specialists, the general practitioner-run skin cancer clinics, their detection rate, and they classify this by a statistic called the number needed to excise. The number of lesions needed to excise to detect one non-melanoma skin cancer is between 2 and 3 benign lesions need to be excised for every skin cancer. And for the pigmented lesions, it's somewhere between 10 and 20 benign lesions are removed for every melanoma detected. So there is an issue with specificity of the diagnosis, but of course that can be improved by training, and we saw that in the German study, that if you do have specific training centered around skin checks, then you can improve both the sensitivity and specificity of the instrument. And then the final thing is cost, and that depends to some degree as to what dollar value you put on each life year saved, and that's something that I don't really understand how the government calculate that, but they will have a formula, and that will probably ultimately determine what sort of recommendations filter through the system in terms of how often people should have skin checks. Now, one of the things is guidelines are fine, but as doctors, we tend to respond to what the patient walking through our door requests that we do, so what they've actually come to see us about. And so some people come to us because they've been instructed to come because of a guideline. Some people come to us because they have a concern. And skin checks is one of those areas that the guidelines are relatively unhelpful, but patients are still walking through our door saying, I'd like to have my skin checked, I'm worried about this spot. And so that's a big part of the day-to-day workload of general practitioners in Australia.
Indeed. And so saying that someone does come in saying, I want a skin check, there's a few different frameworks for doing it. Can you tell us a little bit about the framework you use when you're conducting a skin check?
Okay, well, I suppose the first thing to decide is what are you looking for? And that is influenced by what is the prevalence of various skin cancers in the community. So what we know is that in 2010 there were almost 780,000 skin cancers diagnosed and treated in Australia, and only about 1% were melanomas. So whilst melanomas are the most deadly, they're the least common. The vast majority of skin cancers that people have in Australia are basal cell skin cancers and squamous cell skin cancers. And basal cell skin cancers are still about twice to three times as common as the squamous cell skin cancers. So the first thing is, what are you looking for? You're looking for BCCs, SCCs, and also melanomas. Now, when a patient walks in the door and asks you to look at your skin, the first thing I do is I undress them down to their underwear. I don't think you need to remove their underwear because that's an area that's been shielded from the sun for most of their life. It's reasonable to ask the patient a question if they've got any lesions that they're concerned about concealed by their underwear and then examine them if there are. But on the whole, you can do an examination with their bra and underpants left on. The thing I do is I undress them and I do a full skin check. I sit them on the edge of the couch. I examine their each arm in turn. I examine their face, look at their hairline margin behind their ears. Then I lie them down, face down, and examine their back and the back of their legs, roll them over, examine their front, and if necessary, then palpate any regional lymph nodes if I'm suspicious of a skin cancer in that region. So it's a full skin examination. You can do it in about 2 to 3 minutes. And you have the option of, if you see lesions that are of concern, then picking up the dermatoscope and examining them with the dermatoscope. Now, the thing that you look at on the skin is that you make a call on each lesion as to which category it fits into. And from my point of view, I tend to just have three categories, which is clearly benign, clearly malignant, and too close to call. And so if it's clearly malignant, then it will need treatment on its merits, depending on what you've diagnosed it as. If it's clearly benign, then it doesn't need to be treated, although patients may sometimes request a lesion to be treated for cosmetic purposes. And if it's too close to call, then you've got to decide what you're going to do to establish the diagnosis. And the first thing that you might do is, if you're skilled and experienced with a dermatoscope, is that you might examine it with a dermatoscope. And that may give you some more information, although sometimes if you don't know what it is with the naked eye, putting the dermatoscope on won't necessarily clarify it. So quite often it looks just as confusing under the dermatoscope as it did under the naked eye. But if you don't know what it is, you've got really two other options after you've examined with the dermatoscope, and that is you either refer it on to a dermatologist who can make a definitive diagnosis, or you do a biopsy. And you have a number of choices as to how you do the biopsy, whether it's a punch biopsy, a shave biopsy, or an excisional biopsy, and that again depends on what you're suspicious the lesion might be. But you must, you know, when the patient walks out of the room, there's no point saying to them, well, listen, I'm 80% certain that one's okay. Because from the patient point of view, that's not good enough. They need you to be 100% certain that lesion is benign for them to go home and be able to sleep at night. And similarly, from your point of view as a doctor, if the patient walks out of the room and you're still thinking about the lesion, thinking, geez, did I leave something behind that I shouldn't have, then that's not going to help you either. You're not going to be able to sleep at night. And so if that happens, then what you should do is you should call the patient back and say, listen, I've thought about that lesion and I'd like to take a biopsy, or I'd like to refer you on to a dermatologist for a definitive diagnosis.
And so that's one of your three useful rules of thumb about, you know, if you're worried, get them back and biopsy. What were the other two that you have in particular that you mentioned in the article?
Well, I think when you do take a biopsy and you send it away for pathology, the pathologist is actually going through that same algorithm: clearly malignant, clearly benign, or too close to call. And if it's too close to call, they don't necessarily have the option of referring it on to someone else for another opinion. So what they've got to do is they've got to find a way of communicating to you that this lesion is too close to call. And sometimes the way in which they do that is with a long, wordy report, multiple paragraphs, and no clear conclusion at the end. And when you get a report like that, what you need to do is you need to get on the phone and talk to the pathologist and get him to communicate what his level of concern is. And sometimes he might say, listen, I'm 80% certain this lesion's benign, but I'd like you to go back and make sure that it's completely excised or re-excise it. Or, you know, I really cannot exclude that this lesion is a melanoma, so maybe you should just re-excise the scars, though it were a melanoma. Maybe just put a half a centimetre margin on it, and that way we know that everything that should have been done was done, and that if there is an adverse outcome down the line, then at least we know that this lesion was treated in the way that it would have been had it been a melanoma, because it's not always possible for the pathologist to be absolutely certain. The other thing is, if you've had a lesion and you really think it was malignant, or you really think it was benign, and the pathology report comes back uncertain, and particularly if you've just done a sampling biopsy, a punch biopsy or a shape biopsy, take another biopsy. Sometimes you find that when the initial report doesn't match the clinical impression, go back and take another biopsy if there's any of that lesion left behind, because sometimes you find that different parts of the lesion show different levels of histology and you'll get a different result. And a common example that we sometimes see is that you do a biopsy, it comes back as BCC, you go back and do the excision and it comes back as an SCC. So different parts of the lesions can have different characteristics. In that situation, both diagnoses are a skin cancer, so you're going to go back and re-excise it. But it just does highlight that the first report that you get isn't always accurate, and if there is uncertainty, take another biopsy if there's still some lesion there, or if you were convinced that the lesion was malignant and the report comes back benign, excise it anyway, or refer it on for another opinion, because I think your instincts are very valuable and very, very useful. And I think you've got to go with your gut instinct sometimes.
Indeed, that does make a lot of sense. So then the article actually talks about some of the common benign lesions that we won't particularly talk about in this interview, largely because there's great pictures of about half a dozen of them in the article that people should have a look at. But it does make the point that there are a lot of benign lesions that you'll see for any type of skin cancer you'll see. So while you're looking for it, it's equally important to know what the other things you might see are. So just in summary, what are a few key messages you think GPs should remember about skin checks?
I think there's two components to this. One is the reason I put so much emphasis on the benign lesions in that article is that going back to that algorithm of when you examine a patient, it's either clearly malignant, clearly benign, or too close to call. I think what most people find when they start out in general practice is that they're not so bad at diagnosing the malignant lesions. They're not very good at diagnosing the benign lesions. And because they're not good at diagnosing the benign lesions, they tend to get bundled in the too close to call. And you find yourself being pretty confident that this lesion's benign, but you don't know exactly what it is. And so you end up biopsying it. So the way in which you improve with experience as the years go by is increasing your repertoire of being actively able to positively diagnose the benign lesions, and that shifts them out of the too close to call basket into the clearly benign basket, and that reduces the number of benign skin lesions that you end up excising because you weren't able to actively exclude skin cancer. So concentrating on diagnosis of benign lesions will really improve your diagnostic accuracy and improve your strike rate with your biopsies. Now, the other part of the question in terms of what are the key messages that you need to take away as a general practitioner, I think the first one is that skin cancer is common. There is a high level of anxiety and concern in the Australian population, which is entirely appropriate in view of the large number of skin cancers around. I think it's important to understand the epidemiology, and with melanomas, when you actually look at the figures as to who cuts out melanomas, whether half of them approximately are removed by specialists, half by general practitioners, most general practitioners would expect to see one new primary invasive melanoma somewhere between every 2 and 10 years, depending on their patient demographic. So melanomas, you're not expected to be diagnosing a melanoma every week, every month. You'll be seeing one somewhere between every 2 and 10 years. So they're not that common in the general practice community. So you don't need to have a very high level of anxiety, fear that you're missing melanomas every day. But it also means that it's difficult to gain expertise in the diagnosis of these lesions because you're just not seeing enough of them. And so having a relationship with a dermatologist whereby you can get rapid access for your patients into the clinics is very important. Having a good relationship with your pathologist so that you understand what he's saying in his pathology report is also very important. Having a system whereby you can quickly and effectively do your skin checks is also important. And having a system as to how, understanding the workflow in your practice as to when you're going to do the skin checks. So in other words, if a patient at the end of a consultation says, oh, by the way, doc, can you check my skin? It may be perfectly appropriate to say, listen, I do my skin checks on a Friday, or come back and we'll book another appointment and we'll go through and do it properly then. The other thing is that when you do your skin checks, you need to have looked at a few atlases, be confident with the diagnosis of benign lesions, and you need to be prepared to back up your judgment. So in other words, if it is too close to call, then you need to have a process and a pathway that you can use to establish the diagnosis. And if it's clearly benign, then obviously you've got to say that and you've got to be prepared to stand by that. And if it's clearly malignant, you need to have either a referral pathway that you can send the patients through, or you may want to do the surgery yourself and be set up for that. And if you do, then there are some very good books around to help you do the minor surgery, and there's also some good training courses. I think there's still two areas of confusion in general practice, and one is, what's the value of the dermatoscope? And I think GPs are feel under a bit of pressure that this has now become the standard of care, that you need to be an expert with a dermatoscope. I think it's quite appropriate to be cautious with the dermatoscope. When we look at diagnostic accuracy with general practitioners who use dermatoscopes versus those who don't, there's not a huge difference in the diagnostic accuracy. And in fact, when you first pick up the dermatoscope, it often reduces your diagnostic accuracy. It often, provides additional confusing signals. So the way in which I recommend you use the dermatoscope, if you're going to use the dermatoscope, is that first of all, you take your history, you do your examination with the naked eye, you make your diagnosis and you decide what you're going to do. Then you pick up the dermatoscope and confirm that opinion. And one of the things that you can do doing it that way is you can also use this as a way of auditing the process and see, did the dermatoscope change my diagnosis? And if it did change my diagnosis, did it actually improve the accuracy? Because what you often find with the dermatoscope is that using the dermatoscope makes you biopsy more benign lesions. And so I think that that's a useful way to use the dermatoscope, assess it and appraise it and see, is it improving my diagnostic accuracy? Is it a useful tool in my practice? Or am I better off just looking at these lesions with the naked eye? Now, the other thing that I think is also an area of confusion, contention, is what's the role of photography in general practice? And lots of patients come in and they say, I'd like to have my moles photographed, as if the photography itself was the diagnostic tool. And what we know is that the photography is not the diagnostic tool, it's actually the doctor. It's the eye of the doctor which makes the diagnosis. And the photographs are sometimes just useful as a follow-up, as a monitoring tool. Now, I don't like the idea of seeing a lesion where I'm uncertain of, in that too close to call basket, taking a photograph and bringing the patient back 3 months later and comparing it to the photograph. I think there's a lot of uncertainties in there. First of all, is the patient going to come back? Secondly, will you be able to retrieve the photograph at the time of the consultation when they do come back? And thirdly, just because it hasn't changed doesn't mean that it's not a melanoma. And I've certainly had experiences back 10, 15 years ago in my early days in dermatology where patients were brought back 3 months, the lesion hadn't changed, but it was still a melanoma. And so they came back another year later with that same lesion that hadn't changed in the photograph, and it was a melanoma. So I don't think you want to be getting reassurance from the fact that a lesion hasn't changed over a 3-month time frame that it's not a melanoma. The other thing is, what's the role of full body photography? And I think full body photography has a role when people have more than 100 moles, particularly when they've got large numbers of dysplastic nevi, so that you can actually examine the patient systematically and compare their moles to their photographs. Now, when a patient comes in with photographs, I find them quite distracting in the examination. So what I tend to do is put the photographs to one side, do a normal full-body examination, make my decisions as to what's going on, then pick up the photographs from before and use them as a second check. Now, I think photographs have a role in terms of communicating diagnosis to the patient, but I still am skeptical as to how useful they are as a diagnostic aid. I think the onus of diagnosis still comes on the treating doctor and their eye, and getting their eye in through building up their experience in the diagnosis of skin cancer.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for talking to us today and for writing the article, Skin Checks, which people can read in the July 2012 edition if they want to go and particularly look at some of the photos of those benign lesions that we can all look at and get good at to increase our diagnostic accuracy. Thanks for talking to us, Rod.
My pleasure.